Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
The Around the NFL Podcast is thankful for an excuse to get away from their families.
Happy post-Thanksgiving, everyone in America and across the world. Happy Friday. It's Around the NFL. We are scattered across the Southland and surrounding territories the day after, the morning after Thanksgiving. Big day, big sports day. I've already said it, but in case you didn't hear, and it's going to even sting more after the fact, all these English listeners that are very confident about how the soccer match is going to go today, wow, a lot of disappointment. By the time you hear this, the disappointment will still be soaking in from a USA upset for the ages. So that's coming up later today. We got a full game. We have a full slate of Sunday games. But Mark, Greg, starting now, we're going to go through the three Thanksgiving contests, and it was some fun football.
This is one of the best football days of the year. We didn't have to do a show, which was nice. You could just watch the football. But I'd say we got one great game, one at night, extremely entertaining game. I don't know if it was a great game, but it was fun. And then, you know, the middle game at least was interesting. We had a comeback. You know, that was as good as it was going to get.
Well, what a different Thanksgiving slate than the last 25 to 26 before it. Because typically that early Lions game, you got the family starting to get together, random relatives, and it operates as a total energy suck inside your house. This was the complete opposite. And it was like sitting there in the earliest game of the day, and it is a fantastic matchup between the Bills. And like, I just wish it had ended differently. It kind of, I know that you think that I'm not really like on the Lions team of ATL thing, but I needed them to come to me. And I think yesterday they did. And I got pulled in emotionally. And now it, like, of course, now that you get pulled in emotionally, they just cut your throat.
So it's your fault. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm nuts. I'm just saying
you needed them to come to you. So they needed to win three straight and then have a lead over like a Super Bowl favorite. And then Mark was like, okay, I'll maybe be interested.
Well, my bar is high.
He's also a Titans fan now. So the bar is very high in terms of what you need to do to earn his loyalty these days. Yeah, I think especially where we are on the West Coast, the first game kicks off at 9:30. Perfect. So you really, I was one of the people that hosts Thanksgiving, my wife and I. So there's a lot of stuff to do, but the 9:30 kickoff, beautiful. You have stuff that you're doing, but you're watching the game, you know, pretty much unbothered. Then the middle game comes and things get a little messy time-wise with people showing up, more things you have to do. So that was the one game where I wasn't as locked in, and that's fine because that was the least interesting game. Then the late game comes post-dinner. You settle in, you enjoy it all. So it was great. It was American. It was John Madden. I really like that, the way that the NFL played up the Madden side of things, because he really is Americana, and he is football and he is Thanksgiving. So well done by the NFL. Shall we get into the games, boys?
Please.
Sure.
All right. Justin Graver, speaking of John Madden, before we get into Lions Bills, let's hear from the legend.
And boom, there's no place to go.
Some people say that shtick, he says, boom, that's what I'm too good. Boom, you hit him. I mean, that's boom.
Boom, 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 boom.
Boom, wow, he's right through there. That's the way football should be run.
Second and goal from the 5. Josh in shotgun, two receivers right side, two to the left. The snap, Josh wants to throw. Fires left side, caught, touchdown. Stephon Diggs, touchdown Buffalo. They moved it all all the way down the field, and the Bills regain the lead with 2 minutes, 40 seconds left.
Yes, Josh Allen, Steph Diggs. You know, that was a big play in the game, obviously. But the bigger play, the bigger Diggs-Allen connection for me, and in terms of what it meant in the game, was after the Lions, and we're going to get into it, how the Lions handled that final possession, settle for the long field goal. And then Josh Allen, and I know, and Romo was all over this, boys. He was saying that elbow is still a thing. There's certain throws that are going to ding him, and it's something he's struggling with. He put that thing on a line 45 yards down the field to Diggs to set up Tyler Bass's 45-yard field goal, 2 seconds to play. It was the difference in a Bills 28-25 win over the Lions on Thanksgiving from Ford Field. Greggy, let's start with the Bills side of it because, again, I think this is the stuff of champions. This is a team that rolled through the league, hit a lot of turbulence, and now, even though it's not as easy as it was, you see that in them, that DNA of the great teams that rise up when necessary, and they did it again in this game.
Yeah, the two drives back-to-back. Yes, it ended with the Diggs touchdown to take the lead with 2:40 to go, but I think of that drive as an example of how Allen's evolved. They were so patient on that drive. They gave, you know, the Lions were backing up. The Lions are not a great defense. They forced three stops in a row, four really, because they had the interception to start the second half, and then three punts in a row. And then Allen finally gets patient again and moves the ball slowly down the field. It reminded me of week one against the Rams. We've seen this development from him. He ran when he needed to, and he ran more in the fourth quarter once again when it was winning time. But it was mostly 6-7 yard passes, going through his progression, being patient, got protected well, and it ends with the Diggs touchdown. And then you get it back with 23 seconds left. And we're so used to these teams setting up for field goals and 23 seconds left, but it's like not normal. And it takes something great like that Diggs throw that you mentioned. So you get the patience, you get the intelligence, but you get the athleticism and then the ridiculous arm. And on a day when the Lions almost felt like the better team, it's like the Bills still had the best player, and that's Josh Allen.
Yeah. And I mean, just, you look at what the Bills have been through over the last week, and it was notable to me the look on Josh Allen's face afterwards when he was just embracing and hugging Diggs. Like, Diggs is the one they talked about on the sideline, kind of acting as like the spiritual center for that team, trying to lift them up, because Tracy Wolfson said they were totally flat. That Lions team had really taken the energy out of them entirely from wire to wire until the end. And I know, I mean, Romo said it roughly 740 times about the elbow still bothering Josh Allen, but you could see it, I think, on a bunch of throws, but then he could still, it's kind of like, when these guys are down physically, like, Allen still made those key throws when it mattered most. And we've gotten to the point with the Bills. I know they're a terrible red zone offense statistically, but when they had those 20 plus seconds left at the end, was anyone doubting that they were going to go down and kick the field goal? And it just happened automatically. I mean, we're used to it with him.
And it should have never happened. It should have never happened. No. The Lions, who really, you know, I do feel an attachment to this team. That really does go beyond any other team of ATN we've had. I think some of it does go back to Hard Knocks, and that Campbell is so likable. You know, there was a out of halftime interview with Campbell. Let's play that, actually, Justin.
Coach, you were efficient. You controlled the clock. You were aggressive. What more do you need to do to close this one out?
Yeah, there's a few things. Defense, we got to get off the field on third down at least a couple of times. We're fighting them pretty good right now, which is good. We got to do that. We got to get a takeaway on defense. Special teams, we're about to pop a return. We need one of those. We may have to steal a possession. The other thing is offense. Protect the football. Stay aggressive.
I mean, that's why Dan Campbell's so great and so easy to root for. Every other coach, those sideline reporters get nothing, and he gives it a lot of thought. He gives you actual information. But with that said, the way it was handled down the stretch, that final drive, the clock manager, they have all their timeouts, and tick, 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 tick. They end up putting themselves in a position where they could have won the game. And I know Jared Goff misses a pass there, and maybe we're not even talking about this. They could have won the game with a touchdown. They could have tied the game with a field goal and left no time on the clock, but they ended up in a situation where they set up for a long field goal, and they had no business. Even to me at that point, I was like, they don't really deserve to win anymore the way that played out. They got away with it, and they lived for a few more minutes, but I was really disappointed with how the offense handled that final drive, and Lions fans obviously know what I'm talking about.
I don't hate that they were trying to take the time off, because they were trying to make sure that the Bills didn't win the game, and they were trying to score a touchdown there if they could, but they would have settled for overtime. The problem is the execution, the combination of the play call and then Jared Goff's execution on third and one with, I think it was 31 seconds left. To not run the ball there and just get the first down when you have three timeouts, you guarantee at that point that there's no overtime.
Before
so I hear
the incomplete
you there.
Deep throw.
Before the incomplete.
But also, Greg, before that, they literally just punted 10 seconds off the clock before burning a timeout. I thought they were in legitimate position.
They got those
position.
10 seconds back, ultimately. That was a roller coaster because of, but yeah, because.
But like
because
they had that. I think if they play that aggressive and just go for it and are a little smarter, I think they could have stolen that game, and we'll never know, but I think they got put into a little position where they played it a little too cute near midfield, and then, like you're saying, got maybe a little too aggressive on that third and one, and then did I think, Mark, how about we go for it on fourth and one? But you really couldn't because you didn't leave enough time at that point to really have a efficient chance analytically to get down to the end zone.
I think it's another look at a team that's they're almost there. You can feel it. And this situation, they completely, if he makes the throw to Chark, like you said, we don't care, because it kind of took away from a really good day from Jared Goff in general. But a couple plays before that too, Goff had a bad throw to a wide open DeAndre Swift on first and 10. That would have been a big gain. It just like he was really what I thought it was his best game of the season up until that final series where it was a team meltdown situationally. And, you know, Dan Campbell after tried to explain what was going through his head. And in the ultimately, yes, they got at it with the time getting put back on the clock. There was no 10-second runoff with the false start. But that said, like, you cannot leave the Bills that room to operate. And it's just that's the difference here.
But that's like, it's more on Goff than anything, because ultimately, yeah, you call the pass play there. And ultimately, he's the one that decided to go deep. He has him wide open. They talked about it after the game. They all said, like, we don't regret it because we had a guy more or less wide open to win the game. And I saw on Twitter, Ryan Clark, a former player now with ESPN, was kind of just like, if Goff decides that's the throw he's going to make on that play, if you're going to let it all hang out, you're going to be like, I'm going for it. You got to hit it. Like, you can't miss it by a ton. And Goff said after the game, just like, I wish I had that throwback. I mean, he had a more or less a wide open guy to win the game, and he just missed the throw. So when you compare that to Josh Allen, like, it's just these small things. You're absolutely right, Mark. He played a really good game overall until that closing sequence. But it's like, you also just got to have your players hit the shot, Jared Goff.
Yeah, and I think with Goff, when you look at kind of big picture for Goff, I feel like he's played his role very admirably in Detroit, which is he is very much a bridge guy in the last couple of years where they didn't have maybe the quarterback that they wanted in the draft, a guy that could hold the fort while you get better around him, and maybe you go back and go find a quarterback that you could really get behind next year. I think he's done overall well for them. But yeah, that's an example of the limitations of Goff. He's just not a special player. And sometimes because he did play very well, but he also threw that like hideous, like falling down, falling away, should have been an interception throw. You're always going to get that with him. But they did. You're right, Greg. I thought that for so much of this game, you would never be able to tell that it was the Bills that were 8-3 and the Lions that were 4-6. And that, again, speaks to the progress of Detroit. He said it after the game, Campbell, that this hurts, but we don't feel like we are in a bad place now because of this game. And I get that. The confidence should still be high for them.
I think so, too, because it's like, look, are they a playoff team this year? That would have changed things had they won that game in a weird NFC. But that said, it's just little things, and it's not just that Goff throw. Like, the safety was a bit of a mess. Jamal Williams has his second fumble of his career. That roughing the passer call by Austin Bryant, I thought, was
terrible.
A totally unnecessary game-changing scenario that helped the Bills entirely. It was, but it was just like, you didn't need to do that to Josh Allen. So it's like a Lions team that is going to not make those mistakes when they get to that next level. And it's just like, I thought, if anything, though, that they said that was the second biggest crowd ever in that stadium. It was loud. It was on total tilt.
Yeah.
The halftime show was amazing.
Yeah, Mark.
What? Let's talk about that halftime show. What was going on with that?
What? Do you have anything to say about BB Rexha Anything
I just thought
specific?
It was an intriguing thing to be airing in our house at, like, you know, 11:28 a.m. It's an intriguing choice by the NFL.
It wasn't quite as wholesome as Creed 2003 at Texas
or the
Stadium.
Jonas Brothers later right. in the day. Yeah, you're right. The crowd loves this team. It was a missed opportunity. Like, Jamal Williams to me is the heart and soul of that team. They need a pass rush. Aiden Hutchinson, I was like, did he play in that game? He was literally not in the box score. He was not in the box score. They had a guy who played on Deion Sanders' team last year who had his first ever game. He's, I think, one of the first players in NFL history to have two sacks in his first game. That was James Houston, who stepped up as a pass rusher. But they just have no pass rush. The Bills are also sweating this game because they lost Von Miller.
Yeah, that didn't look good.
What looks like a significant knee injury. The reports out as we're taping this are that it's going to be multiple weeks at the least, and it could be as bad as season ending, but they need more tests, and it's uncertain.
Deion Dawkins. Can I help you with this, Greg?
Please.
Because ESPN's Adam Schefter reported he did not tear his ACL, but he's out indefinitely. What this is a sprain of the knee, which is also some moderate tearing to a ligament, maybe the MCL. So I see this as a 4 to 6 week injury.
Can we add Dr. Dan to your list of nicknames?
You would think that if, you know, Schefter has, you know, whatever the team has at this point, if they're not willing to get a little more specific.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Well, I think
Bill's
fans
know he'll be back, but it's, yeah, hold tight.
How's Deion Dawkins looking, the left tackle who suffered an ankle injury?
Incredible. No, I haven't been tracking Deion as much. Anyway,
they're getting short suddenly. Russo's been hurt. Epinesa's out. They were very good pressuring the interior with Ed Oliver and their defensive tackles. But if they don't have Von Miller the rest of the season or most of the rest of the regular season, they're not the same. They're not quite the same.
He's
Bills
the
team. Now they've lost Micah Hyde. They've lost Miller. It's just getting to be like, them not being the same team doesn't mean they don't have a chance, but they've come back to I think it's easy to say they've come back to the pack in the AFC.
And let me just be clear, because I don't think this would happen, but I don't want to be the subject of a critical Mike Florio post. That was just me f***ing around. I know nothing about Von Miller's injury situation.
I got it.
Well, I know you guys did, but if anyone's listening, I was like writing a Roto World blurb, or I don't need that floating out there on Twitter that NFL Network's Dan Hansis reports that Von Miller has a sprained MCL and is out 4 to 6 weeks.
That would be an incredible event on the day after Thanksgiving
actually kind
for you
of
to be dealing with that all the weekend
maybe
long.
Worth it for entertainment value. All right, let's move on to my favorite Thanksgiving meal, ironically, is after Thanksgiving, when you make the sandwich and you have the bread and you can put the turkey, some stuffing, a little cranberry, salt and pepper, a little gravy maybe, and you get the sandwich. So the sandwich, the middle of this Thanksgiving group of games, was Dallas, New York from Arlington. Let's check it out. But first, let's hear again from the legend, John Madden.
You know, Thanksgiving is a traditional day, and our tradition is being at a football game and turkey and turkey legs and turduckens and, you know, great football players. And there's no place that I would rather be than right here with you at this time, and it doesn't get any better than this.
This is our family.
Third and goal from the two. Handoff coming to the left side. Hendershot on a handoff to the tight end, and all the tight ends are going to jump into the Salvation Army kettle.
Like, half my uncles on the Finnegan side looked like Pat Summerall, so I'm not completely certain that it, in like 1991 at Whaley Lake in upstate New York at the family reunion, that Summerall wasn't there on the party boat. What happens on the party boat on Whaley Lake stays on the pontoon. Well,
just ask the Vikings about that.
I would say it went that far. All right. Yes. The middle game was the New York Giants and Dallas Cowboys. And it was a game that the New York Giants started out strong. It looked like it was going to be a game that went down to the wire, but it didn't turn out that way because Dallas took control in the second half. Dak Prescott threw two scoring passes to Dalton Schultz. Zeke ran one in. The Giants get a score late, a little lipstick on the pig. 28-20, the victory. For the Cowboys, who moved to 8-3, right behind the Eagles, and look out. And the Giants, like we talked about, Mark, coming down to earth a little bit now. In the last 5 days, they go from 7-2 to 7-4, and they played pretty well. We'll get to the Giants, but let's start with the Cowboys. They're stacking wins and looking very dangerous.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it was not a pristine performance by Dallas. Obviously, a lot of sloppy play in the first half. I think they doubled the Giants in penalties and some costly penalties. But then they're just like a team like this, and the reason you believe in Dallas in general is that their star power and their explosive offense took care of business in the second half. I mean, and then on the defense, I think Micah Parsons, who last week destroyed Christian Darrisaw before he went out with a concussion. Andrew Thomas for the Giants, who had a problematic early career, has been on fire this season at left tackle, and he got taken care of. It's just like Micah Parsons is this unstoppable closer. Beast. That is a completely different element for Dallas and seems to be the kind of guy that could just take them through playoff games. But when they play the way they did on offense in the second half, and you get that version of Ezekiel Elliott with Tony Pollard on the side and CeeDee Lamb, I mean, they're just unstoppable. And the Giants, for me, one little thing, I know sometimes you used to watch me watch those Browns games where I just say game over, like in the second quarter, when Daniel Jones missed that 4th-and-1 to Saquon Barkley and they were down 14-13, there's a ton of time to go, but it's like this thing is cooked. The Giants they've peaked in this particular performance. That I think that was very much a game of like, that's who the Giants are. They're not a bad team. They're well coached, but you can't deal with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Saquon. Well, I'll get back to the Cowboys, but since you're mentioning Saquon, like, since that 35 carry game we talked about on the podcast, we wondered how he'd have to follow that up. He has 61 rushing yards in 2 weeks. They've targeted him 11 times for 26 yards. And they don't have anything if they don't have Saquon. It's definitely not all on Saquon, but I thought he ran quite poorly against Detroit. Yesterday didn't stand out to me. I think they were overmatched ultimately. But if they don't have Saquon, and part of it is the injuries up front, and maybe part of it is him being a little more tentative, which when he doesn't have the blocking, or maybe it's the wear and tear of the season, I don't know what it is. But when they don't have Saquon, they don't have much, and they're going to have a really hard time winning games.
I don't want to make too much of it, but I think it's a good call, Greg. We talked about it in the moment and how he was on pace to obliterate his touch total from the previous 2 years combined this year. But I do think he doesn't look quite as explosive these last 2 weeks, and maybe is some decision making. He caught a little bit of criticism on the broadcast for maybe looking for the home run when he should just be hitting the hole. But early in the season, he was like that 2018 guy where every time he touched the ball, there was just kind of a bit of an electricity to it. I'm not going to make too much of it, but it does feel like there's a little bit of a difference in him right now. Maybe he's playing through something that we don't know about.
Right, and they have a really hard schedule. They have one game left against a team that's under 500, whereas the Cowboys now have three in a row against three under 500 AFC South opponents, not the Titans, the rest of the three. So they're ready to go on a run. The Giants are going to be tested. Two of those games are against the Commanders, so you know, if you're a Giants fan, you hope you go in that, but things get hard. And now you look at Dallas as a team that has a chance, I think, not just to, you know, represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, but there's an outside chance to be the one seed. If Dak Prescott plays like this...
Did you say outside chance, Greggy? I think it's better than that.
Well, they're two games behind, so you got to almost run the table at this point. It's a must win, obviously, against the Eagles. You're going to need to get a little help from the Eagles, who don't have, like, the hardest schedule in the world. But you're right. They have a chance.
I guess my point is, you look at their remaining schedule. I know the Eagles don't have the toughest schedule, but they're not playing very well right now. They very nearly lost their second in a row to the Colts. The Cowboys have a head-to-head matchup with the Eagles. They take care of business there, and they're one game out, and then they just got to – I think they have – Eagles clearly have the inside path, and the Vikings can't be ignored in the conversation. But, yeah, I think the Cowboys have a real chance at doing that, pulling it off.
You know what, though? I would also rather see this Cowboys team maybe not get the number one seed down the stretch and, like – have to grind their way through and remake what we think they are in January. This team feels different to me than last year's team. Mike McCarthy is not a liability right now in my book. I just think that there's something going on with this. I'm not sure I enjoy the development because it's not a team I really want to deal with in Super Bowl week, but if that's what happens, that's what you get.
Well, I would love it.
Then Jerry Jones can say everything I've been saying for the last quarter century is valid when it's not the case.
Calm down, Mark.
I just like watching them play football because they're a fun team, and I love seeing this version of Dak. I think that's been the most important development in November is Dak Prescott's playing like a top five quarterback. I know he had the interceptions early yesterday. I don't care. He threw the ball unbelievably the last 2 weeks, better than I think any quarterback in the league for 2 weeks. Like Next Gen Stats had a number two. He had the highest completion percentage over expected of anyone this year in that game, of anyone that's thrown 30 passes in a game. One play I wanted to point out was a spin that he had on second and long to start the second drive of the second half. And that's where he really caught fire. And they were going to sack him, and it was going to be about second and 20, but he pulls a spin move, ends up running for like 6 or 7 yards to set up a third and short. And that's the athleticism that he's been showing. He looks so athletic and he's throwing the ball great. Later that drive, he hits Schultz on the touchdown on a third and 15. Just when he throws it well, he's got it all. He's got the arm and he's got the way to read defenses. And I just think if you blitz him like the Giants do, eventually he'll figure you out. And I love watching that Dak Prescott.
And I know it's going to happen because kind of to what you're saying about the Cowboys, Mark, some of everything with Cowboys just seems so like set and stone. They just are who they are. Odell Beckham's going to be on this team, and maybe that will help them. Maybe it won't. But I would hesitate, based on what I saw yesterday from Michael Gallup, from bringing in a guy off a torn ACL that hasn't played a snap this season, and then minimizing Gallup, because I think if Gallup continues to improve and show what he was showing yesterday, I think that will be also a big part of this offense, having that guy at number two step up, because Gallup, I think he's an underrated player. I think he wasn't the same guy initially earlier in the season, but if he finishes strong, this offense just gets all the more dangerous. I really think this Cowboy team with Parsons leading the D, I think they have a shot.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say about the Odell thing, because I'm with you, I think finally you waited all this time for get Michael Gallup to look like what you'd hope, and he's there now. I mean, we saw it yesterday. It was a different player. But look back at the Rams a year ago. Had they not gotten Odell, and then Robert Woods goes down, I'm not sure they get to the Super Bowl or win it. So it's just like, why not add strength on strength at this point in the season?
Well, I'm not saying not to sign him.
Yeah,
sure. I'm just saying, just don't diminish Gallup.
Yeah, don't diminish Gallup. Yeah.
I don't think they need him, and if they get him, great. But I don't think they need him. Their numbers when they have two tight ends on the field are better than any team in the league except for Kansas City. That we heard the highlight where it was that the four tight end play, which is like an old Mike McCarthy thing. They do make it very difficult to defend them when they have those two tight ends on the field, because they run it so well with Pollard. Zeke isn't the same, but he's still got the instincts, even if he doesn't have the juice. But Pollard's so good. They just hit you with a lot of ways. We do have an update on the Odell Beckham situation. I wish I knew who was reporting this. I'll get that to you. But he is going on three trips, and he's starting his trips with the Giants. And the Cowboys are third in line. The Bills are second in line. Yes, that is development news. It was from Josina Anderson of CBS Sports. So
wait, let's go over those three teams.
With the Giants is interesting.
So New York, the biggest media market, his former team. Yes, that is guaranteed to generate a lot of attention. The Cowboys, the most highly publicized team in the sport. What's the other team?
The Bills are in the middle there.
And the Bills, the Super Bowl. Everyone loves the Bills, favorite team. He's enjoying it. That's fine. Yeah, you get this. Go ahead, buddy. Show your little tour. We're in the middle of a season over here. We'll talk about Odell when he lands somewhere.
Yeah, Giants.
Any other thoughts on this
Giants
game,
would
boys?
Be the team he would help the most. I mean, I it seems like a strange move, but considering he's visiting them first, that usually means it might be a fit. He might just like the idea of New York and going back there, and he certainly, this year and long term, would be of use to them.
He just feels like a Cowboy to me, based on stuff I said prior to this. We'll see.
Do we really, a 30-year-old wide receiver coming off a torn ACL, do we give him the Peyton Manning 2012 free agency treatment?
He's giving it to himself.
Remember when everyone, Gravedigger, we can welcome you in here, thought the Peyton Manning was going to go to the Titans? That was like 2 days in NFL history, or 1 day in NFL history. People thought Peyton Manning was going to join the Titans.
Yep, that was a fun.
Gravedigger. Nice. Good
Well, there's a very distinct reason why he didn't actually, but it's not, we can't talk about it on this show.
You know, Justin is really good on mic. He's got his own podcast, of course, on the Titans, which everyone should check out. But one of my favorite things is sometimes when you catch Justin off guard, we get that answer. And that's almost one of my favorite parts of the show.
Well, sometimes I'm giving a stupid answer to stall while I try to find the drop to play. So
that makes a lot of sense.
And then you would, the logical thing on our behalf would be, it'll be like, well, you know what? Why don't we, don't worry about that drop anymore. But no, that needs to stay as well. And speaking of Peyton Manning, the Jets had a doomed pursuit of Peyton Manning. And just to make their quarterback feel better, Mark Sanchez, they gave him a huge contract extension that immediately backfired as a result. So that was, if you didn't get Peyton, you were hurting in different ways. Anyway, Cowboys win. Giants have come back a little bit and their season's at a little bit of a crossroads. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll hit the primetime game.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When I think of John Madden, I think of the word big. John was a big man, big personality.
Boom, we cross him. The left goes to the right goes to the left.
Hall of Fame coach, really a Hall of Fame announcer, and has done so much to promote the love of football. A special, special man.
John Madden's grin is from ear to ear.
One of the great ambassadors in the history of the game.
First and 10 from the Patriots 15. We're all tied at 26. Cousins under center. Play action to Dalvin. Kirk's great drop. Looks to the end zone for Thielen. Yes! Touchdown! A 15-yard touchdown bullet from Cousins to Thielen. And it's 32-26 Vikings.
Yes, that would be all for the Vikings and all they would need. Paul Allen with the call. WKFAN, I should say. Kirk Cousins threw for 299 and three touches for one game at least, dispelling any notions that he can't play with the sundown. And that go-ahead score to Adam Thielen with 9:34 to play did lead the Vikings past the Patriots, a game Patriots team, 33-26. On Thursday night in Minneapolis. Greggy, this was a game the Vikings obviously needed after an embarrassing blowout at the hands of the Cowboys 4 days earlier that kind of readjusted the way a lot of people looked at them. I don't know if this, for me, changes my feelings about the Vikings. I kind of expected them to handle the Patriots, and I thought the Patriots would show up in this game. But at the same time, a huge win for them because you bury what was the low point of your season pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it was a huge game for both teams. There were more lead changes to take the lead than any game since 2018. They showed a stat.
Five, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was, I think it was six in the end. Like, there were, it was up for either team to take control of. So I think it's a heartbreaking loss for the Patriots. And I think it's a massive win for the Vikings because it was all about Kirk. Kirk started the game very up and down. He threw an interception. He had another one or two passes in the first half that made, or one in the first half, one in the second that could have been picked. But other than that, he was throwing dimes. Justin Jefferson was the best player in this game. And sometimes it just comes down to that. Yes, Kirk like put it in a good spot for him, but these were tight coverage catches for him to get 9 for 139 in a touchdown. I think they put to bed that this Patriots defense is in any way special when they play against like a real quarterback and a real offense. But I think Kirk Cousins showed that he is that guy. And they were good pointing out on the broadcast early that even though he started with those interceptions, like he was making difficult timing throws again and again into that Patriots coverage. And he stood up in a day where they needed to put up 30 to win this game or else it wasn't going to happen. They did it because I think that's their route to being relevant is being an offensive team, because I don't think this team is special at all. I think they're below average defensively in Minnesota. They're going to need Kirk Cousins to have games like this.
In that Thielen touchdown, why does it happen? Because all game long, you had two or three people on Justin Jefferson. And Jonathan Jones, who's a good cornerback, gave up six catches for 95 yards and a touchdown to Jefferson. I just think part of it is that the Cousins-Jefferson connection, he just has so much belief in Jefferson's ability to make
catches. They were double covering him the whole game.
Catches.
They tried to take him away.
Sometimes triple. And so it's like Cousins still, I think, you know, versus a different type of wideout out there, a different cast of characters. Like, he just believes Jefferson's going to make the catch, and he does. And I mean, I just thought this was a weird game for New England because I thought you had your best Mac Jones performance up until that fourth quarter where the offense just fizzled away. And a week after they essentially fried the Jets with special teams, and we were talking all week long about how much that's imbued in who they are and the Belichick experience, they had a terrible running into the punter on fourth and four that set the Vikings up for new life. They gave up the punt return, obviously. They had a 31-yard punt themselves. It was just a sort of a complete meltdown at home. I thought that was unexpected for New England. They're sitting at 6-5 right now and out of the playoff picture.
Yeah, I thought in general, and now they have, you know, at Buffalo, their next game. So we're gonna learn really where New England sits. I thought they hung well in this game. You're right. It is ironic coming off what happened the previous week that the turning point in the game was a special teams play because the Patriots take over at halftime. They go right down the field. Mac Jones to Hunter Henry. And let's talk about Henry again a little bit later. But 37-yard touchdown. They're up 23-16. And then to give up the 97-yard kickoff return to who's going to help me with this? Kenny Nwangu? Close.
I went back and listened to it. It sounded similar.
That was a crusher for the Patriots. But I thought it was really important to see Mac Jones on the Patriots side build off what I thought was a pretty good game against the Jets. Now to throw an attack downfield and make plays. It should have been another touchdown pass. He should have finished with three touchdown passes in this game, if not for a very, very strange call, I thought. On a Hunter Henry target near the goal line on third down. What was the situation? At what point in the game were we at?
It was third down, and they had to settle for a 26-23 field goal. It was mid-third quarter. So it was the ensuing drive after the kickoff return.
Right, so exactly. So you have the touchdown out of the half, you have the kickoff return by the Vikings, and the Patriots, to their credit, take the ball back, and they don't go three and out, and the game gets away from them. They go right down the field again. Mac Jones hits Hunter Henry for what is, to me, a clear touchdown that would have put them up by seven in this game, and it's with 6:43 to go in the third, but instead they challenge it and they rule that Hunter Henry didn't maintain and survive contact on the ground. I could hear Chris Westling going nuts about this right now, this call on the field, and because I thought this could be something, because I, even as a Jets fan, was outraged by the call. What does Zolak think about this over on WBZ? Let's listen to what he had to say.
This damn league can overrule this. You can't more crystal clear indication of the fingers under the ball. Did the ball come up? Yes. The ground didn't force the ball. It never touched the ground. What worst case scenario, it should be at the 1 foot line.
Well, there's the thing,
when he
though,
secured the catch.
The replay review outlasted the television break.
They're looking for stuff now.
You know what annoys me? It's funny. The sentient Powerade bottle. Everything he said is right there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that was a totally sober-minded, crystal-clear take on things, I thought. I agree with Zolak.
I think Terry McCauley got this call overturned. I continue to believe that the broadcast team, Jim Nance, often gets them to replay it. They're all watching the broadcast. And McCauley came in and was weirdly confident that this should be overturned from the beginning. And Zolak's right. You can see the fingers under the ball. But I think because McCauley was so clear, I really think that's what does it sometimes. And it's like the first view. It's supposed to be review, though, where it's like incontrovertible evidence to overturn it. So that was crazy. And it was part of, like, you know, they were on the end of some tough calls. They also made a lot of boneheaded mistakes. It was just like a really sloppy one. I think they'll regret because of those.
That's an interesting comment, Greg. Terry McCauley is a employee of NBC. And if if he's the one responsible for,
I mean,
these
this
calls
is wild speculation by me, but we know that when Nant says they got to look at this, then suddenly they stop. They start looking at it. So
I'm
that's
not saying
just,
I disagree. I'm just saying if that's actually what's going on here, you're using an outside the league employee of the broadcast to make major game shifting calls. I would hope that's
or
not
just
happening.
Letting it influence you because right. I was trying to come up with a reason why that would have been overturned otherwise.
I think Greg has a point though in the sense that is that triggering it automatically? No, but is there this idea that there's this bubbling up perception of something having gone wrong in the game? Twitter's going nuts. Everywhere it's becoming a talking point. It's becoming a subject for shows the next day, and it's like, quick, let's get on this and maybe even have our decision influenced by the reaction in real time.
So some calls went against the Patriots. There was also like a missed face mask. On Mac Jones on the second to last drive, a tripping call that they could have made on one of those sacks of Mac Jones. All that said, the Patriots lost this game more because they struggled in all the ways that Belichick hates, which are not unique this year. They were way negative on penalties. This year, they're number one in the league in terms of net penalties. So, like, they have more penalties than their opponents. They're second in the league in net penalty yardage. This was another one that killed them. They're terrible in situational football. They were 0-for-3 in the red zone. They're one of the worst red zone teams. They blew the clock situation at both the end of the first half and didn't have time for a couple extra plays to score a touchdown because both Mac Jones and Hunter Henry made mental mistakes. You mentioned the running into the punter thing, which led directly to 7 points. They kind of botched even the final drive situation in terms of clock management. They've just not been a smart team. And this isn't a unique thing to this last week. They've been a very sloppy in the way that Belichick hates type of team all year, and they lose the turnover margin. It's like this team's not good enough to win that type of way. They're just not.
But Greg, do you not think some of this charts back to the fact that in an avant-garde approach to coaching staffs, they have this minuscule coaching staff that includes his son and a defensive coordinator and a special teams coordinator of old running the offense. And they spent the first 2 months of the season totally disjointed on that side of the ball. We're finally getting a little bit from Mac Jones, but it's like there's no robust voice in Belichick's head ear on these sideline situations. Like this is atypical of the Patriots. I think it's a little bit because of how the coaching staff is constructed.
I agree, although they were very sloppy a year ago, too. So maybe, who knows? Maybe it's just like...
Maybe the old man's getting old.
It wasn't that different a year ago outside of the offensive coordinator.
Right. You're right, though. That was Mac Jones' best game by far this year. So that was incredible.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little more optimistic about New England out of this game.
No, I am.
I think they're going to be fine.
That was a huge moment for them to throw for 382. I know there was a little garbage time at the very end, but he was over 300 by that point. A lot of big plays down the field. He's thrown accurately 2 weeks in a row.
He was hyper accurate in bad conditions against the Jets, mostly short game. He attacked downfield. I think it bodes very well. The Patriots, to me, I kind of see him as like a 10-7 team, and I think that it will be enough to get it in. But they gotta
They have to beat the Bills then, though. They can't get. They have two games against the Bills, so if you get swept by the Bills, that puts you at 7 right there.
Well, win the next one because you got at Buffalo and week. Well, you don't know what Buffalo needs or doesn't need by week 18, but the game will be in New England, just to correct myself. Thursday night football on December 1st. And on the Viking side of it, it's crazy the way that the season has played out. But the Vikings can clinch the NFC North next week with a win over the Jets at home and a little bit of outside help. So they have put themselves in an excellent position here. They're right in it with the Cowboys and obviously the Eagles still leading the NFC. And I'm feeling Kirk Cousins this year. I'm feeling continuing to stack some big games and put some ghosts to bed.
Why is no one talking about Kevin O'Connell as coach of the year? I mean, especially after the way they bounced back this week and what they are in general. I mean, I get
it. Is he your choice for a coach of the year?
I'm just saying he's in the mix. I'm not saying he is my choice right now.
I want top five lists for all the awards, by the way. They're just doing it for MVP. Give it to me for coach of the year.
Well, what about for top five for assistant coach of the year? I don't know why that hasn't been like a priority number one.
I feel like the lighting has changed in your room in the prison.
I am next to a window, and typically when we do this on Fridays at 10 a.m., I have to cover up the open space with a lot of garments, and I failed to do that. And now I feel like I have like the sun burning the skin off.
Well, this is an audio only one. Are we putting this up on YouTube, Justin?
God, I hope not.
Oh, we are. We are. Right. People should be checking out our YouTube shows. I know some of you guys like it that way. You see the facial reactions. We've noticed the previews and the recaps, especially people are starting to watch them. So do it. If it gets us paid more in the long run, let's do that.
What? Why? No. If you enjoy the program in that way, please do that. Don't get us paid more. Greg, is that where we're at in our development?
I'm just having a little fun. I'm having
no
a little fun.
No fun allowed, Greg. All right.
I thought they almost didn't make a big enough deal of the fact that Kevin O'Connell was drafted by the Bill Belichick to be a backup for Tom Brady like 8 years into his career. And here he goes and beats the guy that drafted him. That's pretty cool.
I feel like everyone at some point in their lifespan was drafted to be a backup to Tom Brady. That was me in 2002, actually. Didn't work out. Didn't see the field. All right. So there you go. Those are the Thanksgiving games. Thank you to everybody for listening. Like we said, Sunday, we're right back on our usual schedule with the flagship program. Remember, also, if you're in the Los Angeles area, the homecoming show coming up in January, January 18th from the Bourbon Room in Hollywood. It is going to be a great show. So please get your tickets and join us. Check out our socials for a link for that. Anything else, boys, to share before we say goodbye?
I mean, I just a happy Thanksgiving to you guys. You know, I know we got the whole weekend here. And let's go U.S. The problem with your confident way you started this podcast, Dan, is, you know, the game will be over by the time most people hear it.
I said that.
I know. I know. That's I'm just saying.
He's just calling his shot.
It's
like,
going to
like
be
that.
Beautiful.
It's probably not going to go
it's
well.
It's going to be beautiful.
The timing is tricky. Yeah, the time. We can't edit it. I will take the slings and arrows if by some shock to the system, England actually beats the U.S. in a World Cup match, which has literally never happened. So I don't expect that to change. But if it does, I will on Sunday give respect to the Three Lions.
It's a great move, Dan, to antagonize what is essentially like 35% of our listener base. So I hope that goes well for you.
But there's other countries out there. We had a listener from Norway who wanted a shout out. So shout out to Norway.
I said 35%. So that leaves another
65%. We're not playing.
You just look ghoulish right now with the way the light is hitting your face. Well, you just stop?
If we keep talking, the game will literally start.
All right, everybody. Thank you to everybody. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Sunday night. Until then, Dan Hansa signing off for the ghoulish Mark Sessler, the Quiet Storm, the old boss, the grave digger behind the glass. Remember, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.